Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, everybody? It is the first episode of 2024 of Catfish on Ice. This is your host, Chad Minton, with co-host Max Greenberg. We've got 2024 off to a outstanding start with the Predators beating that so-called team from Chicago. So we're off on the right foot already.
Absolutely, and I was there in attendance yesterday, so that was even better.
How was the atmosphere, man? How was the, was it a good crowd? Was there a lot of Blackhawks fans?
Not too much, honestly. Like it was pretty clearly, you know, Preds fans, and it was also one of those games where we had the they had gold shirts over the seats. It was one of those games where everyone was there, and it was really good, man. We got the shutout win, so it was even better.
It started off as a little bit of a snoozer, and you were kind of worried about the Predators kind of needing to wake up a little bit, but eventually they showed that they were by far the superior team. UC Saros gets his 22nd career shutout, his second of the season. So we are really going to break down that game tonight to open up episode 215 in the opening faceoff. Also going to list off some players who are facing the most pressure in 2024. So I'm sure we're going to really dive into that. I've got four players, in my opinion, that I think are facing the most pressure on this team. I'm sure Max is going to chip in on that as well.
Yep.
Got to do our New Year's resolutions surrounding this team right now. We do that every year. We're doing it again this year. First of all, Max, how was your New Year's Eve as well?
It was great. And actually, New Year's Eve is my birthday, so it was a good birthday and a good celebration all around.
Nice. That's always That's an interesting birthday to have on New Year's Eve, definitely.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And then also, we are going to reveal who has won a t-shirt. Two winners get a t-shirt and a sticker. I've got the hat right here. I've got all the people who responded for this t-shirt that I'm wearing, our new podcast t-shirt. I'm wearing it right now. And we've got some stickers. We will be sending them out to two random winners that I will be drawing out of this Preds hat live on the show. So stay tuned for that. We'll do that in the middle of the episode. Also, what else do we have to get into here? Let's see. Really, so a lot of things are going on out there about the Winter Classic. Of course, the Seattle Kraken won their Winter Classic game over the Vegas Golden Knights. So I want to throw a question out there to all of Smashville. Whenever the Predators finally get to host a Winter Classic, it might be a long ways down the road because Nissan Stadium is no longer going to be available for that outdoor game. But just hypothetically, which team would you most want to see the Predators face if they hosted a Winter Classic?
And honestly, I'm not sure how that's going to work moving forward because, I mean, I'm pretty sure the new stadium is not going to be retractable. Vanderbilt Stadium, I think, is going to be the only option going forward.
Ooh.
That is not ideal.
Well, Vanderbilt Stadium just doesn't hold enough people. That's the problem. It's not really...
At least it would fill.
It's not the location. What's that?
At least it would fill. I guess
it would definitely fill, but I'm pretty sure the NHL would want a seating capacity of more than 30,000.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. I mean, the option that might be suitable is First Horizon Park where the Nashville Sounds play, and I can guarantee you that's not happening.
That wouldn't work either. I don't think that would work either.
No,
I think they would have to wait for an MLB park to finally come, which that could be years and years and years down the road. So,
if ever.
Yeah, they've been talking about that for years. It's one of those I'll believe it when I see it type of things.
Right.
Still wanted to ask that question. Also, a new segment for 2024. I'm calling it the Smashville Pulse. We are going to scan some of the biggest topics that I have come across from the Smashville fan base each week on Catfish on Ice. Two topics that are swirling around this week that I've seen the most brought up across Facebook and on on X is, one, being UC Soros. Should he be traded? Should he not? Is there confidence in Askarov? Big surprise there that that topic comes back up again.
Yeah.
And also, this one was a random one that came up.
Yep.
It came up through our contest, which was name the most underrated player in Preds history, in your opinion. Colton Sissons was a very popular choice.
Yeah.
But somehow, someone brought up Colton Sissons better than Matt Duchene. So people got back and forth on who made the bigger impact on the franchise. Obviously, Matt Duchene was here for a much shorter amount of time, right, and is a much more offensively skilled player. But then you've got Colton Sissons, who does all the little things, who's got the longevity. That was an interesting debate. So I'm going to unpack some of those comments that I came across in our new segment called the Smashville Pulse. So we'll do that to close out episode 215 of Catfish Nights, the first episode of 2024. So, Max, let's get into it. Let's start breaking down this 3-0 win for the Predators over the Blackhawks. They are now 3-0-0 against the Blackhawks this season, so that's always a good thing. I don't care how bad the Blackhawks are, you'll always take three wins in a row over the Blackhawks for a season.
Any day you beat the Blackhawks, no matter how good or bad you play, whenever you beat the Blackhawks, it's a good day, especially for the Preds.
Yes, for sure. And, of course, you shut down Connor Bedard. Three games, no goals, only one assist from Connor Bedard in these three games. And in last night's game, he was held to no shots on goal, which is just a really crazy stat in and of itself, and is a huge testament to how well the Predators game plan defensively for this game. And their game plan was very straightforward. We are not going to let Connor Bedard beat us.
And that's a very effective plan because for a team like the Blackhawks, because even with Bedard, that's still a bottom three roster in the league, and they don't have Taylor Hall.
And look, they hold the Blackhawks to under one expected goal, which is just in today's day and age in the NHL. I don't care who you're going up against. In today's day and age, that is just really, really difficult to do. So the Predators came in with that game plan and worked it to a T. They held Connor Bedard out of this game. He didn't make any impact whatsoever on this game. And you just don't – you like your chances against the Blackhawks when Connor Bedard's not making an impact. You really
Absolutely. Do. Yeah, I mean, he's literally their – yeah, like I said with Taylor Hall, how he's like their only guy basically.
And it was a snoozer, let's be honest here. I mean, the way this game opened up, the Predators were kind of fumbling around as well, even though they were dominating possession and the Blackhawks weren't doing much. It was a pretty boring game to watch there for a while. And then Gus Nyquist breaks through with what was, you can call it a good shot by him, but it was also a really, really weak goal to give up by Soderblom. And it goes to show you why he's one of the worst goalies in the league statistically right now. So you take that goal, and then your other two goals from the Predators, a 5-on-3 goal for a power play by Ryan O'Reilly, and then the empty netter from Luke Evangelista.
Yeah, it did kind of have that feeling. I thought the first period was pretty good. I thought we kind of took it to him with good pressure. We got some chances. Second period I thought was really the main snoozer. And going into for a while in that third period, it felt like the Preds were kind of asking to let the Blackhawks slide the game. We were missing chances, and penalties were happening. I was sitting there like – this, we could let this go. I honestly feel like, you know, if we were playing another team but the Blackhawks, it might have been a very different result.
For sure. I was more worried about the Predators taking that penalty to close out what was at the second period, and they had to come out on the penalty kill to open the third period.
Yep. 2 minutes. And we had one turning point. At the end of the first period, too. Lauzon had a penalty that carried over into the second. So that's not great. I mean, penalties still have not really been a non-issue under Brunette, and that's maybe an understatement, honestly. They've still kind of been a problem.
That's your turning point of the game right there, though, is the Predators being able to open that third period without surrendering a power play goal. That could have completely flipped the game around and made things really uneasy, because after you get out of that, shortly after they kill that penalty off is when the Predators got the 5-on-3 power play, and Ryan O'Reilly gets his 15th goal of the year, and he just continues to dominate on the power play. And what I loved about this 5-on-3, so I was watching the Blackhawks broadcast in this game just because, you know, sometimes I like to hear the other team's announcers, see how they call the game. And I posted the video on my X account if you want to go check it out. but it was such perfect timing. So right off the opening faceoff to open up this 5-on-3 power play, the announcer goes on and says, huge penalty kill coming up for the Blackhawks to turn momentum around. And then not 2 seconds later, O'Reilly's there wide open.
It was net. Automatic. Just like, it literally was perfect right timing. Off the draw. And it, like, I was literally done. Like, I was putting a tweet saying Preds on the 5-on-3, the huge opportunity. And then right away, Forsberg to O'Reilly, done.
2-point games tonight from Gus Nyquist and Ryan O'Reilly. Nyquist is on a 6-game point streak right now.
He is on a tear lately.
We have just got to go ahead.
Crazy well lately.
I can go ahead and tell you right now, the vast majority of Smashville fans right now need to go ahead and say they got this one wrong, including myself. When Nyquist was signed, no one was getting all excited and crazy and making a big deal about this signing. I thought it was a very underwhelming signing. I didn't see anything exciting about it at all. This guy is making a massive impact on the success that the Predators have had so far this season. He was the final piece to the Predators finally having a secure top line, something they really haven't had since the Jofa line, the great day, glory days of the Jofa line. So the fact that the Predators finally have a top line that they can absolutely trust and hopefully take into the playoffs with them if they qualify for the playoffs. Gus Nyquist is an underrated MVP of this team so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was one of the – and I actually – and I have receipts over this. I wrote an article saying that was actually one of the signings that I was actually pretty on board with. And even then, I undersold it for what it was. Like, I was like, a decent signing for a team that's rebuilding. He'll be a good – you know, he'll be a good stopgap for the youngsters. But I did not – even I did not imagine he would have the impact he's having, especially in these past – like, especially the past 3 games. He's been – making plays these past 3 games especially. And it's great to see a guy like that meshing so well with the top line. Also, speaks to Brunette's system favoring the offensive style, and has great chemistry with Forsberg and O'Reilly.
I mean, you can't overvalue how important it is to have a secure and reliable top line. All the great teams that are going to do anything special in the playoffs have a top line that they can just completely rely on. Yep. And the Predators, that was a blender. The top line was a blender for a long time under John Hines.
Like the whole
Andrew
time.
Andrew Brunette has his top line. And credit to Barry Trotz for identifying that Gus Nyquist could really, really help this team. You know, no one was really on board with going out and getting aging veterans in the 2023 offseason. We were all a little skeptical of that strategy. Yep. And there are still plenty of a segment of fans out there who still don't like the fact that they went out and signed aging veterans that aren't going to get the Predators to the next level of winning a Stanley Cup. That's a debate for another day. But you cannot argue the fact that Gus Nyquist has been a major, major surprise for this team, just what he's contributing. He is, you know, I never watched Nyquist that closely when he played for his previous stops, but the guy is a really, really smooth skater with the puck.
He is, absolutely. Yeah,
and he has smooth as silk.
Yeah, and he hasn't lost it as he's aged either. I mean, and that's another thing with Brunette's system. I mean, Brunette's system is so heavily favors great skaters who can skate all across the ice, and it's a perfect fit. So, you know, credit to, again, like you said, credit to Barry Trotz for identifying that fit, because, you know, it's in a league like the NHL and all sports leagues, it's all about fit.
So Nyquist is already up to 29 points in 38 games this year. So he's played in all 38 games for the Predators so far. As we said, he's got a 6-game point streak going. So he is having a revival of his NHL career right now of sorts, and it looks like he has landed in a great spot. If you look at both O'Reilly and Nyquist, they have really gotten rejuvenated with the Predators. You know, they've had accomplished NHL careers before they landed in Nashville this year, but they're kind of getting a new jolt back into their NHL careers with Nashville right now.
And if nothing else, and maybe I'm kind of spoiling the party here, but if nothing else, Barry Trotz got a good asset that he could trade and get things in return. I mean, that's for a team like the Predators that are going to rebuild, and who knows, it probably won't be traded this deadline, maybe next, because he's got 2 years in his contract. But if Barry Trotz decides he wants to sell high on one of his players and get a good return, someone's going to pony up to pay for Gus Nyquist. And it's not like they're going to have to retain salary. I mean, he's on a cheap deal. I think, what's it like, two or three? I think it's $3 million a year. That's still really good for a guy like Nyquist.
And you need guys like that. If you're going to make the playoffs, be successful in the playoffs, you got to have veterans who have been there and done that. So, you know, just been really pleasantly surprised with what Nyquist has done for this team so far. Looking more at the stats here in this 3-0 win over the Blackhawks, the Preds completely dominated possession in this game. 36 shots on goal. Blackhawks only get 21. They dominate the faceoff circle. They go 2-for-4 on the power play. The giveaways and the takeaways are pretty close there. And the Preds will play the Blackhawks one more time this year in April in Chicago. Let's go for that 4-game sweep again. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
All right, so now looking at the standings right now, the Predators holding on to that top wild card spot in the Western Conference with 43 points. Your second place team is in the wild card is the Arizona Coyotes. The Preds do have games in hand still over the rest of the division, so a little bit misleading there.
You mean the other way around?
Yeah, they've got extra games played is what I meant to say. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, can't be standings watching too much this time of year, but it is nice to see the Predators right there in the thick of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. And they let it get a little bit away from them during the past week and a half on the kind of losing streak we had, but they're still right in it. They could easily still take a spot in the top three in the division if they go another streak like they went in November, December.
Although that's a fairly lofty expectation.
Let's not act like that's going to be the norm.
This is our first episode since before Christmas. So there's a lot we've missed and a lot we really have to quickly touch on since then. The biggest one being that complete just fall apart stretch against Dallas. That game, it's going to take me a long time to get over that game.
At least you weren't there in person.
Nope, I was in an airport, and when I got when my plane took off, the Predators were winning 2-0, and it was looking good. And then I land in Nashville to find out that the Predators fell apart in the last 60 seconds of the game.
My buddy, who I was with of the game that day, literally after the game ended, we sat in our seats for 5 minutes after, like, this did not just happen.
And then since our last episode, we've also seen Yaroslav Askarov make his second career start, his first of the season, and he got the win. I know we're going back a little bit. What did you see in Yaroslav Askarov's first start of the season?
I mean,
beating the Capitals.
I mean, it's not perfect, of course, but I thought for his second ever NHL action, I thought he looked pretty comfortable. He didn't seem rattled. He wasn't getting faked out, really. I thought he looked like a guy who had done it before. And of course, like I say, he wasn't like a completely seasoned pro, but it looked like a guy who was not intimidated by the big moment. For the circumstances, it looked like a guy who it was about what you expected. The one thing I will say about Askarov, and it's just something that's going to happen with him probably, and we're going to have to live with it. He's just going to have to learn this the hard way. He's very prone to playing the puck, sometimes maybe a little recklessly. One of these times he's going to get burned, and we're going to say what we want, but he's just going to have to learn that lesson some point because sometimes he's got to learn the hard way. And I believe it's bit him a few times in Milwaukee before.
Oh, it's definitely going to burn him eventually. It is inevitable. It's going to get him eventually. It's something he's going to have to learn, and he's going to have to get it out of his system.
Yep.
But he is a very confident player, and sometimes that confidence can work against him maybe. You know, it's kind of a you live and die by it. Like you don't want to ever take away that player's confidence, but maybe rein him in a little bit. Be like, hey man, we can't have you going out there and trying to play the puck and play it off the boards.
Right.
He's not a seasoned NHL veteran that can get away with stuff like that, like Saros can, for instance. So he definitely has to rein that in a little bit, be a little bit more conservative in those situations. But in terms of a lot of positives to take away from his second start, he showed a lot of poise, like you said, a lot. He looked very comfortable out there. He made some really difficult saves. The Capitals definitely were coming towards the end of that game, coming after them. And then, of course, the shootout. He goes perfect in the shootout, including stopping Alex Ovechkin, probably his childhood hero.
Yep.
I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah. I will say, you know, my big takeaway, and this is the really important thing here. I believe one of the last podcasts before this, maybe one before, we were talking about when we could see him realistically have a full-time backup job in the NHL. And I was thinking, from what I had heard from people who I know watch the Admirals really carefully, I was thinking it's not going to be at least for another maybe, you know, at least year or two. But I'm thinking after this game, it might could be within maybe not this year, but next year, you got a legit chance of him coming down being the backup. I mean, that game made me think it may not be as long as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's just one game, so we can't overreact to just one game. You know, I've been pretty clear on how I feel about it. I think you got to figure out a way to trade Kevin Lankinen and call up Askarov to close out this season. It doesn't mean he stays up here permanently or that he doesn't start back in Milwaukee next year. But I'm thinking, if you're the Predators and you're Barry Trotz and you're the scouting department, you've got to get some serious game film of Askarov on the NHL level before you make a decision on what you're going to offer UC Saros.
Yep.
And also, if you actually are going to trade Lankinen, I think you got to get Askarov a handful of starts this season, because you really need to see a larger sample size than just one start last season and one start this season. And of course, the only reason he was even in the game is because Lankinen's dealing with an illness that seems to be lingering. We'll see if how long before we see Kevin Lankinen back in the mix, but we don't really know what's going on there.
He was on the bench yesterday. I think he's fine now.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we just see one start for Askarov, but I'm of the belief that you got to get more film on Askarov on the NHL level before you can make any decisions on these goalies.
No, I agree. And that's also another thing is like seeing that game that Askarov played against Washington, that made me think, okay, it makes sense to trade Lincoln and at least see what you have in Askarov. And if it falls flat in its face, it's like, okay, I mean, you're still enough. Even though the Preds went on that winning streak, we're in the playoff spot potentially, you can't forget this is still a rebuilding team, and it's okay to test out Askarov in a year like this where your expectations, and you still have to be patient with this team, but in a year like this, it's okay to give Askarov the backup job at least towards the end of the year.
I'm right there with you on that one. Couple other things I want to touch on before we move on to the next segment. Let's go back to the Blackhawks game just now that we witnessed the last game here. More bad news for Cody Glass. He gets healthy scratched again.
Yeah.
He's only played in 16 of the team's 38 games. Some of that is due to injury, but he's also been healthy scratched a few times. It's becoming more and more dim right now, because right now the Predators are choosing to go with Michael McCarron at center instead of Yusuf Parsonen was at center this past game. And then, of course, Novak and O'Reilly are your top six centers. So there's just – I mean, they've tried to put Cody Glass on the wing, and I just don't think he's going to ever work out on the wing. He's got to be a center.
No, I don't think so either. He's a center.
And right now the Predators are way more – content with rolling with the centers that they got right now with Parsonen looks way better at center than Cody Glass does right now.
So does Michael McCarron.
And Cody Glass doesn't fit the bill of being a fourth line center at all.
No, not at all.
You're not going to take out that physicality that Michael McCarron brings you and force feed Cody Glass into the lineup where he's probably not going to excel in that spot.
Yeah,
so right now, unfortunately, Cody Glass is on the outside looking in right now, and I don't know how he gets back in unless an injury happens.
I mean, yeah, I actually wrote an article a few weeks ago about Glass, and I pretty much said in that article, I actually did a lot of research for that article. I looked on Money Puck, and the underlying analytics actually show that, like, Glass has been better this year than, you know, it might seem. You know, he's actually been decent. He's actually been fairly highly graded when he's been on the ice in a lot of these categories, but like he's still not, you got to make most of your opportunities, and it's hard right now. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It could be that he's not getting his chances, but like when you're on the ice and you get your chances, you got to make them count, and he hasn't done that. And it's really hard to manage it, especially with a roster that's one of or a Preds roster where it's one of those where you just can't play everyone.
Absolutely. So this is a perfect segue into our next segment of episode 215 of Catfish and Ice, and that is players facing the most pressure for the Predators in 2024. This is just my opinion, but of course I want to get everyone's thoughts on this as well. And so I've got it on the screen right here, my short list. And of course, perfect segue because Cody Glass is tops on my list right now.
Yes.
Of players facing the most pressure in 2024.
Yeah. No argument there.
So how does Cody Glass get back into the Predators lineup? Well, I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to play another game. He's obviously, they're going to give him another chance at some point to get back in there. But then who do you scratch to get Cody Glass back in? Maybe Trenin got scratched recently, and I've got him on my list as well, but for a different reason. But, man, I just don't know how you put Cody Glass in right now, unfortunately, because no one else on this team is playing poorly enough to justify taking them out to put Glass in. That's the problem you have right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing well, but like because of the center, do you take out Michael McCarron and maybe bump Colton Sissons down to fourth because he kind of fits that bill better? I mean, you got a lot of tough decisions to make, and it's also reason that's why it may be easier to trade a guy like Trenin at the deadline because you got to make room at some point. I mean, you can't be sitting Cody Glass forever. That's just not good for anyone.
I mean, he signed for another year as well. So he's at a $2.5 million cap hit. He's got 1 year left. I can't see the trade market being too crazy for Cody Glass. And I don't think Trotz wants to give up on Cody Glass either right now.
Nope.
You've got to give Cody Glass time to prove that he can belongs in this lineup. So at some point, Andrew Brunette's going to have to find a way to get Cody Glass back into the lineup. And maybe it's the same situation that Philip Tomasino and Luke Evangelista went through earlier in this season. It's a reset. We've heard that term thrown around a lot for these young players where Andrew Brunette likes to call it a reset, a little mini reset for these players, these younger players, when they get in these funks. And so maybe for Cody Glass, he's getting his little reset right now. But here's why he's facing more pressure than maybe anybody on this Preds team right now. He's got to make the most of every game he gets right now because he kind of is playing for his NHL future right now with the Predators.
And what also kind of sucks about the Glass situation is for guys like, Tomasino and Evangelista, you could say, okay, just give him the Milwaukee reset or something like that. But Glass is on a one-way contract. You can't send him to Milwaukee without putting him on waivers. And Lord knows Trotz does not want to do that. You either play him in Nashville or not at all.
Oh, I think Cody Glass would absolutely be claimed on waivers
No chance he makes it through
no
waivers.
No chance.
No, not at all.
Got a lot of people jumping in the comments here. Active chat room tonight, so I appreciate all of you. Get the conversation going in the comments. We got Buster in here saying, hey. We got Nikki in here. Mike Twitter is on here. We got Shasktooth Tiger in here saying good evening to everybody. Justin Gambino's in here. Man, we got a packed house tonight. I love to see it.
We do have a packed house tonight.
Love to see it. All right, so let's move down my list here. Let's get to Yakov Trenin. I've been talking about this a lot as well. I've written about it. I got a lot of pushback, especially on Facebook from a lot of fans thinking that I'm posting fake news and all this stuff. And I'm like, look, I'm not saying he's for sure getting traded. I am not an insider. I am just like you guys. I post my thoughts and my opinions about the Predators. My opinion and my thought is that Yakov Trenin is going to be very, very difficult to re-sign in free agency.
Absolutely.
And it would be one of those situations where you don't want to lose this particular player, but you might not have a choice, especially with a UC Soros contract extension that's looming over us. You've got some other really important free agents that you have to get signed, including Tommy Novak this offseason. So I don't know. And Yakov Trenin is not an old player by any means, but he's also kind of starting to get into that middle part of his career where you feel like his ceiling is pretty low and he is who he is. He's very important to your team. You don't want to lose him, but he's probably hit his ceiling. I don't see him suddenly becoming a 50-point scorer or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I very much think Yakov Trenin is a player who he is what he is. And you don't ideally want to lose him, but you don't want, you certainly don't want to lose him for nothing with the, with how, you know, with how crazy this roster is right now with, you know, guys not being able to, not everyone able to play. You might just be better off getting a, you know, mid-round draft pick for him and just saying, you know, but at least we got something. We can make more room on the roster for guys like Cody Glass to come in and play. I mean, yeah, I very much agree that Trenton's someone who, you know, should be trade bait at the deadline, and he probably won't. And he probably won't. Again, you can't re-sign everyone. That's for sure. You know, you got a, there's a lot of players that the Preds have UFAs and RFAs. But yeah, you know, I, for a guy like Trenton, I would definitely trade him for, you know, a mid-round pick. And, you know, and you're right in the sense that, you know, he is what he is, and he's not just suddenly going to become this top six. I mean, Colton Sissons has had a breakout year this year, but I don't see Trenton being as the player Sissons is, and I think you'd very much agree with that.
Oh, for sure. So I'm pulling up. I mean, I've looked at this list a million times, but I'm going to pull it up again just so I make sure I get it right. So your 2024 free agents coming up, both RFAs and UFAs for the Predators coming up in the 2024 offseason. You've got seven forwards on this roster who will be either a UFA or an RFA yep. this offseason. You know for sure that Tomasino, Parsonen, and Novak are all top priorities to be re-signed because they are your young core. They are your young nucleus that should be that you have to keep as part of the retool that you're talking about. It should be pretty easy to get all three of those players re-signed with no problems at all. But then you go further down the list. Michael McCarron is a UFA. Kiefer Sherwood is a UFA. And Cole Smith is a UFA. They're all signed to very minimal deals right now. I could see maybe two of those three getting brought back. You're not keeping all three of those players probably past next offseason.
No. Yeah, again, you just can't keep everyone. You can't do it in a cap league. And the Preds having so many guys they got to bring back. Someone's going to be collateral damage at the end of the day.
So the reason why I put Trenton on this list is facing pressure is he's kind of playing for the market, for his market value. He's playing, he needs to have a kind of a career type of year for him. He needs to definitely up his point production a little bit. I think he's got like 9 points this year, which I mean, everyone goes off points. I know he does everything else. He does a lot of things well, but if he's going to be on the open market, if he's trying to play for a pay raise, if the Predators aren't willing to give him that pay raise and he's trying to stand out to another team out there on the open market or on the trade market for that matter, he's facing pressure. He needs to show out. He needs to play really, really well and secure himself. If he wants to stay with the Predators, then he needs to give the Predators no choice but to re-sign him. And he has to do that through his own individual play. And I'm not so sure that he's done enough to really stand out and make Barry Trotz feel like he has to re-sign this guy. I don't think he's done enough.
No, Trenton at the end of the day, you know, he, like you said, you know, he is what he is, and you know, he does a lot of good things, and you might appreciate what he does, but at the end of the day, he's a pretty replaceable guy. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to be among Trotz's like crazy priorities. You can find another Yakov Trenton at the end of the day.
Definitely. All right. Let's see. We got some other people jumping in that we got a new poster hey, here on X. We got Matt. He's giving us some, I guess, some lines that he prefers here. Forsberg, ROR, and Gus Nyquist. We know about that. Yep. On his second line, he's got Parsonen, Novak, and Evangelista. Love that second line.
Yep.
Absolutely love it. His third line, he's got so he's trying to tell us how Cody Glass basically gets back in the lineup. So yep. Matt's got his third line as Kiefer Sherwood, Cody Glass, Phil Tomasino. I'm not against that. And then his fourth line is your bruiser line, your hard-hitting line, if you will. And that's yep. Yakov Trenton, Colton Sissons, and Cole Smith.
Yeah.
And if you kind of like that lineup.
If you trade Trenton at the deadline, you can certainly bump Sissons over to the wing and put McCarron at center or vice versa. So, yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, so this lineup takes Michael McCarron out and puts Cody Glass back in. So. Yep. I don't know. I just don't know, though. This organization seems to really, really love Michael McCarron in there. Like, he's been a mainstay on that fourth line.
McCarron's a tough deal for me, honestly, and I love what he does. But at the same time, I mean, one of those grinders is going to have to go out for a guy like Glass to get back in. I mean, there's no easy decision there whatsoever.
All right. Got some other comments on here. Cole Smith, 100%. From Nikki. Buster jumps in and says that he wants Sherwood back. Sherwood's going to be a tough player to keep. Sherwood might be doing just enough to get a pay raise. So I don't know. It's going
to
be tough. Well,
Sherwood's actually one of those I would like to keep too.
Shashka Tooth Tiger jumps in and says, to be honest, Trennan, Sissons, and Forsberg are the players we still have that I really believe in. All right. A huge, huge segment of the fan base loves Yakov Trennan. They do not want to see him be lost. I got plenty of that pushback from the fans when I wrote my Yakov Trennan article about a week ago on this exact subject. It's a very, very touchy subject for Smashville fans. I totally understand why. Let's move down the list. Tyson Berry, pretty obvious one. He's facing a lot of pressure, not because he has a future in Nashville, but because he's trying to find his next team. He is definitely trying to audition for his next team. But unfortunately for Tyson Berry, he's getting very sporadic playing time right now.
Yeah, I mean, and he is dealing with injury right now, so that's definitely part of it. But it's also, I mean, his play on this year has not really been inspiring enough for a team to really say, yeah, like, we want him. He's been up and down, honestly, maybe at best. It's been a bit of a rough year for Berry.
And, you know, you're looking at the Predators' defensive alignment right here. I really, really love that Fabbro is back on the top pairing with Roman Josi. I mean, you those hope two got to stay together. What?
You hope that lasts, at least.
It should. I mean, you look at Money Puck, the best defensive. You look at the best defensive pairings in the NHL, according to Money Puck, in terms of expected goals against. Dante Fabbro and Roman Josi are top 10 last time I checked. They're up there among the best. You got to keep those two guys really together.
They do need to be a top pair. I agree with that.
So Tyson Berry's facing a ton of pressure just to stand out to another team that might think that they could add him on the cheap. So he's a pretty easy one. And then to round out my list, I got UC Saros as a player facing a ton of pressure in 2024 because – he really, really needs to get back to his normal form that we know he can get to. He did get the shutout last night, although he didn't face a lot of tough chances against the Blackhawks. But still, he delivered. He got the shutout. Yep. He stopped everything that came after him. He's got to kick it up to another gear in the second half of the season. He really has to.
No,
he's
got to be way more consistent.
He's got to be way more consistent. He's been extremely streaky this year. And if he stays – if he keeps being that streaky of a goaltender, it's going to make it really hard on the organization to full long-term invest in Saros when those contract negotiations come up, if they haven't already started happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's another thing too. It's like you got Askarov in the fold of him playing well recently. There are no answers with this goaltending core right now, really, to be very honest.
Matt on Twitter says Trennan would look good in a Rangers sweater in March.
And Matt over here is a Rangers fan. Matt and I interact with each other a lot, like a lot individually. And we talk about how Trennan might be a player they look at because the Rangers are going to have to get some depth of their bottom six to go to the playoffs.
Oh, any team contending for the playoffs that's not content with their depth, they're going to be very interested in someone like Yakov Trennan. So just keep that in mind.
Yep.
All right. So, Max, anyone else you would submit to this list of players facing the most pressure for the Predators in 2024?
I do have one more, and that's Alexander Carrier. He's going to be UFA at the end of this year. And a big part of the reason I have him on there is because Carrier's been pretty solid, you know, defensively. But his offensive game, a part of his game that he is, you know, known to be good at, it has not been sharp this year. If you look on Money Puck and you look at like the offensive categories, he's near the bottom in pretty much every one. And not only for a team like the Predators to want to keep him, for other teams out there to really want to, you know, pay him and bring him on as a huge member of their team, he's got to get that offensive game going, or else he may not be the commodity we once thought he was going to be. I mean, that's such a part of his game, and it has to be better at this point. This is his third full year, and you thought at this point it would be taking a good step up, but it just hasn't at this point. And it's got to get better for him.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, he's a UFA as well in 2024. So, yeah. I mean, free agency is going to be very, very interesting for this team, no matter where they finish, whether they make the playoffs or not.
Yeah.
It's, we haven't really seen Barry Trotz fully go through an offseason yet. He was technically making decisions, even though he wasn't the official title yet this past offseason, but we know he was very much involved in getting Ryan O'Reilly and all that. But this is going to be his first offseason as general manager where he has to really try to keep players within the organization that he doesn't want to lose. We haven't seen him do that yet. We haven't seen him go through an offseason like that.
More so than that, this is going to be his first trade deadline he's going to have on his own. Because last time that happened, you know, David Poyle was still there. And at that point, he was still kind of in the shadow. But, you know, once the offseason began, you know, we knew it was pretty much Trotz. But deadline, that's a different story. We're going to see how Trotz handles this on his very own.
Oh, yeah. And we really, really have no idea, no idea at all how Trotz is going to handle this trade deadline. We have no idea. We're 2 months away, basically. 2 months away. Yeah. It's going to come up quick. A lot can happen in the standings between now and then that'll dictate how Trotz handles it. I know a lot of people are nervous about it. Sitting here in January, I feel like Trotz is not going to do that much, simply put, because I don't think there's a whole lot out there to go after. If anything, he's going to trade a player or two off the roster to make room for more players to move up.
No, I don't think the Preds is a huge buyer yet. They're not there yet. They got to go a little more and become a little more established. But I definitely see us, if anything else, being more sellers than buyers. Because if anything, we have too many roster spots taken up.
Exactly. If you add more, I don't see how it happens, but we have plenty of time to talk about that coming up here in the next couple months, so we don't want to dive too far into that. So those are our players that we feel like are facing the most pressure right now for the Predators. Heading in, now that we are in 2024 and going into the second half of the season. All right, let's tell you about DraftKings. We still have an awesome NHL offer going for you right now. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the NHL matchups for Thursday. If you're listening to this podcast today, we got a lot of, let's check out the NHL games that we got on the Thursday slate. So Thursday, January 4th, we got the Buffalo Sabres at the Montreal Canadiens, and you've got the Sabres as the favorites there. You got the Blue Jackets at the Flyers, with the Flyers being the favorites. You got the Bruins at home against the Pittsburgh Penguins as the favorites, and about as heavy of a favorite as you'll ever see in a hockey game. The New York Rangers are heavy, heavy favorites at home against the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah. You got the Lightning at the Wild in a very close matchup, according to DraftKings. Canucks at the Blues, Avalanche at the Dallas Stars, probably your matchup of the night right there.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Flames at the Nashville Predators.
Yeah.
Predators are the very, very slight favorites going in right now, but that is a pretty, pretty close matchup according to DraftKings. The Islanders at the Coyotes, Senators at the Kraken, Panthers at the Golden Knights, Red Wings at the Kings, and Jets at the Sharks. So in other words, a full slate of NHL games for you on this Thursday, January 4th. And so with that, let's tell you about our offer with DraftKings. Download the app now and use code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See DKNG.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023, all rights reserved. So let's move on to our New Year's resolutions for the Predators. We did this last year with Rich Howe on the show, and I would have to go back and remember what all my New Year's resolutions were and if I lived up to them. Honestly, I'm already starting to forget what my resolutions for 2023 were when it came to the Predators, so I'll have to go back to the tape and watch that again. But let's do our 2024 resolutions, Max. Give me yours first.
So are we talking about like us personally or like for the team?
Yeah. Yeah, tied into the team.
So I'm not going to lie. I was kind of waiting for you to say something. I can piggyback off it. Can you go first and give your resolutions?
Oh, you're going to make me go first, huh?
Yeah. Got to shoot you guys straight.
My New Year's resolution for the Predators or the team would be for Nashville to finally regain that playoff atmosphere if they make it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Smashville playoffs didn't feel the same the last couple of years when they did make the playoffs against, because they were heavy underdogs and we really didn't feel like there was a lot to hope for. If they were to make the playoffs this year, I think the atmosphere and the intensity would feel so much different because it's Barry Trotz's team now. Right. It's Andrew Brunette's team. There's a new life. There's a new, you know, revitalization of this team with the speed they have now and the young kids. If this team were to make the playoffs, that Smashville playoff atmosphere, I think, would come back. The playoff atmosphere that we had in 2017 and even the years before they went to the Stanley Cup. The atmosphere for Nashville Predators home playoff games were some of the best in the league at the time. I want to see that come back. That's my resolution for this team.
I would say my resolution is kind of a boring one because I'm kind of piggybacking off what we were talking about, but this team needs to figure out their lineup decisions and just have a group they go in night in and night out and they don't really deviate from. It's just got to – you can't keep switching guys, especially on the defense with the how – you know, Dante Fabro and other guys are switched out repeatedly. You got to figure something out there. And because it's only fair to the players and everyone else. You know, no one wants to, you know, because it's harder to gain chemistry that way. So we got to just figure out a consistent few lines and just roll with them through the remainder of the year. Because right now this roster is not the typical way you'd say a mess, but this roster in terms of how many decisions you have is kind of a mess right now.
Yeah. And I think it's going to continue to be that way for a little bit just because even halfway through the season now, still a lot of trial and error going on here. Yep. Still a lot that Andrew Brunette's trying to figure out. But I do think he's starting to really get an idea of what he wants.
Yeah.
Especially with Josi and Fabro back on the same pairing together, especially with your top line. And even your second line looks pretty good right now with Novak centering the second line. So I do think he's starting to really be set on most of his lines, but there's a lot of X factors right now that he's still trying to figure out.
And he got the first line, which is really good. That's not changing, but you got to get the rest of the team. You know, one line is not your whole team. So you got to get more consistency in there because this roster's got a lot of questions right now.
Here's my next New Year's resolution. This can be settled very, very quickly, very early in 2024. I'm talking like in the next few days. Avenge the Dallas loss.
Yeah.
Beat the Dallas Stars in one of these next two games coming up, and I will feel so much better. I just feel like I know that the Predators have had some success over the last couple of years against Dallas. I know they kept them out of the playoffs that one year, but
yep.
It really feels like Dallas just owns this franchise right now.
You know, we went through some, you know, we had the playoff series against them and we lost to them. Then we went kind of the few years when the COVID shortened year, then the year after that, we kind of felt like we were having some success against them. And now it kind of feels like they've taken it back. It's been kind of back and forth between what team really owns each other in this rivalry, which is kind of crazy.
It's turned out to be a great rivalry, by the way.
Absolutely.
It really has been. But the Predators are going to get a chance really soon to avenge that. And I don't that bad taste is going to stick in my mouth, that loss right before Christmas. That's going to stick in my mouth until the Predators beat the Dallas Stars head-to-head. And what sucks so bad about that loss is I highly regard the Dallas Stars as a top Stanley Cup contender right now. And to just completely fall apart and give them that game in the last 60 seconds is just such a gut punch. So I really want to see if that was just a fluke or if the Predators really are a team that can go toe-to-toe with someone like Dallas. And what better way to do that than your next matchup against Dallas? You go out there and you leave no stone unturned and you play a 60-minute game. When you have Dallas down, you keep them down. You don't let them back in. They're such a good team. You don't need to do them any favors.
Right.
That's something I really, really want to see happen. It's just a really important game.
And then you play them next Friday again in Dallas. So you got two matchups with Dallas really quickly. So,
and it's really big for the standings. If the Predators want to be in that top three, if they want to be considered in that top three with Winnipeg and Colorado and Dallas, they got to win these games. They can't just beat up on Chicago and some of these lesser teams. They got to start beating the top teams. They've got a couple impressive wins this year. They beat New York early in the season. They got a win over Toronto. They beat Colorado in that exciting fashion. But they need to start beating some of these teams when they have them down. So let's see what they can do against Dallas in the rematch. Two rematches.
Yep. I would say my next resolution. Right. Oh, can I go next one?
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I would say my next resolution is for this team to find a way to not be as streaky one way or another. Because like the Preds have honestly so far halfway through the year, it's been a team where it's kind of hard to get a read on them because they start off the year 5-10-0, like really bad. Then we had the month-long stretch of 13-3-0. Then we kind of cooled down after that. Then we beat Chicago yesterday, although we didn't play our best hockey. So you got to figure out what this team is one way or another. And, you know, you would think that the overtime, the law of averages is going to play out and you're going to start to not be quite as streaky. But, you know, one way or another, we got to get an answer as to what this team is. That's going to give us an idea of, like, should we buy? Should we sell? What should we do with the deadline? Like, it's... You got to answer that question.
Well, you know, unfortunately, hockey is just a streaky beast in and of itself. I mean, look at like a team like Vegas. I mean, even they're going through a bad streak right now. I mean, no team is really safe from going through peaks and valleys of a season. Like very, very rarely. I mean, every now and then you get teams like the Bruins who went on that crazy run and won the President's Trophy recently. But I mean, for the most part, it's just the grind of an 82-game season. Everyone goes through their peaks and valleys, and the Predators have been no strangers to that. So, yeah, I would love to see them become a more consistent team and be less streaky. But unfortunately, with so many young players in the mix that are still developing in their own way, they're going to keep being a streaky team most likely. They're going to look really good on some nights, and then there's going to be nights where they look really, really bad. I just think that's the product of a really young team.
I actually look out tomorrow, people. I have an article that I'm finishing tonight kind of explaining why this team is so streaking, what that kind of means going forward. So look out for that one.
There you go. Look for it on predlines.com. We'll have it up for you to check that out. All right. I think it's time to pick out the two winners for the Catfish and Ice t-shirts. Right. And we're going to send some stickers as well with that shirt. Also, I've got a connection back home in Nashville. Who gets some of the craziest, like, random Nashville Predators stuff. Like, it's the most random stuff ever sometimes this guy gets. And I won't name this person, but he's got really good connections, and he just gets the most random stuff. And so when I was back home in Nashville for Christmas, I got a whole bunch of stickers with players' names and numbers on them that they use to put on signed hockey sticks.
Wow.
So whenever Luke Evangelista signs a stick, they put this sticker, this Predator sticker, on the signed stick. So I've got a bunch of those stickers. So I'm going to send those also out with these t-shirts that I'm going to be giving out. So let's pick our winner. First of all, let me pull out the original contest that we put on Twitter or X, whatever. So it was originally, all we did was ask, who is your most underrated player in Preds history? So I want to kind of read some of the comments here first before I draw the two winners. And so we got a lot of really good responses here. Keith says that I know he was appreciated by our fan base, but I think Ryan Ellis never got the credit he deserved from around the league. I thought that was a really good answer.
That is a good one, actually. I like Ryan Ellis a lot when he was on the Preds.
Ryan Ellis was definitely underrated and now missed. Predhead Taylor puts on there Rocco Grimaldi. Yep. Lens says Ryan Ellis. So we have another Ryan Ellis submission. Liz, who's also in our fantasy hockey league, said Connor Ingram. Great guy, great goalie, but definitely didn't get enough ice time in Nashville. Justin Gambino, who is also in our fantasy hockey league, and I think he's in the comments tonight as well, threw in Colton Sissons as his answer is the most underrated. Nikki says James Neal. Poor guy gets no recognition. 2017 playoff run was a lot of clutch, timely goals from him. Catfish Jake, our good friend Catfish Jake, who originally threw the catfish on the ice and inspired the name of this podcast. He also says Colton Sissons by a mile. We've got Freddie Gaudreau as an answer. So time to draw our two winners. I got the hat right here. Wrote these out on pieces of paper. Let's see who the first one is. All right. Let's see if we can see it. Johnny, our friend Johnny is the first t-shirt winner. He does the PFR videos. He normally catches he normally never catches the live show, so I don't think he's watching tonight. But I will get with Johnny. I'll DM him later and let him know he won one of the shirts. He's going to get some stickers. That's our first winner. And he did actually, let me read his response. He did compete in the contest, and Johnny went with Craig Smith. Fan favorite Craig Smith. His hardworking nature always endeared himself to the fan base. The way he expressed his anger after losing to Dallas in 2019 was like, yes, that man is speaking for me. Y'all know my feelings about Craig Smith. That dude is one of my favorite players in Preds history. So Johnny is our first winner. What's up?
Before you draw the next one, can I give one? I don't know if it's most underrated, but there's one I really appreciate when he was in Nashville. Nick Bonino, I thought, was really underrated, not appreciated enough. And that man wasn't
Nick
like
Bonino was definitely a good one.
He wasn't like a huge player or anything, but like that man felt like he did everything right. And you need guys like that in your bottom six. So Nick Bonino is definitely one I think deserves more recognition among Preds fans.
All right, definitely. All right, let's pick our and Max is getting his t-shirt in the mail. Hopefully by the next live episode, he'll have his shirt in the mail.
Sounds good.
All right, let's pick the next winner. Got to shuffle them up good here. All right, here we go. It is another person in our hockey league. Liz. Liz is our other t-shirt winner. She's the hockey goalie. She's in our league. Yep. She's awesome. Sometimes she jumps into live episodes. So Johnny and Liz are our t-shirt winners for this contest. I've got a few more shirts left, so I'll probably do another giveaway at some point. We're going to get more shirts made. Going to get some new hats made as well. So we got more merchandise coming down the pipe. So Liz and Johnny, congratulations. You've won our two shirts and stickers and player hockey stick stickers as well. So I think I got some Tomasino stickers, some Luke Evangelista stickers, a few other players. Maybe Colton Sissons is one of them. So I'll have them pick out what stickers they want. So I'll get with them. Awesome. Love giving away stuff. So let's move along here in episode 215 of Catfish and Ice. Something I forgot to mention in the intro, but I definitely want to touch on it with you, Max. So tomorrow the NHL will announce their first 32 All-Star selections. Each team gets an All-Star pick. So are we pretty positive that Philip Forsberg is going to be our first All-Star selection?
Yeah,
most likely.
I would think so.
Yeah. So after that, the fans get to vote on the remaining 12 players. Aside from Philip Forsberg, who do you think is most deserving of getting an All-Star selection from the fan vote? I think it's probably Ryan O'Reilly would be the most popular choice.
Him or Roman Josi?
Roman Josi is always going to get a lot in the fan vote. He is.
And he's
Josi's always going to get the fan vote.
and he's still
I'm probably going to put my, I'm probably going to put my fan vote to Ryan O'Reilly though.
Okay.
Just because the way he is so quickly came into this franchise and came into this organization and made his impact instantly. There was no learning curve. There was no easing into it and taking some time to get comfortable. The guy literally scored a power play goal in his NHL Preds debut against Tampa. So the guy just never missed a beat right when he came in. His leadership is so obvious on the ice and the way the young players feed off him. So my vote would definitely go to Ryan O'Reilly in the fan vote, but Roman Josi is always going to be a safe bet as well.
And he's number seven among defensemen in points, so that's a pretty big deal too. Again, points aren't everything, but just so Josi is still Josi.
Not so sure that the Predators will actually get anybody in on the fan vote because, of course, it's a popularity contest. It's not necessarily about skills. And if we know anything about the fan vote, usually the big market teams are the teams that get all the fan voted players. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Yep. So tomorrow or today, I should say, if you're listening the next day, we will find out each all-star selection from each team because all 32 teams get representation. Fully expecting it's going to be Philip Forsberg for the Predators.
All right.
We're about to wrap up episode 215 of Catfish on Ice. But before we do that, got a couple more things to get into. The Winter Classic came and went. Did you get a chance to watch the Winter Classic, Max, with the Seattle Kraken shutting out the Golden Knights?
You know, not as much as I would like because it always interferes with the college football playoff.
That and look, so got some pretty rough numbers ratings-wise, TV ratings-wise. Did you see these numbers?
No, I did not.
Max, when it's not good. It's not good. Oh, so let me pull it up here. So the 2024 Winter Classic TV ratings was the lowest TV rating since 2008.
And that was the first year of it. If I remember correctly.
So I guess that's the lowest in the history of the Winter Classic.
Oh, that's not
one. So they averaged 1.1 million viewers. Of course, it was broadcast on TNT and True TV. Not easy going up against the college football playoff.
No, that's never going to work.
Just looking. So this comes from Braylon Breeze on X. I want to make sure I give credit for who posted this. But yeah, so 1.1 million viewers for Vegas versus Seattle. Last year in comparison, it was 1.78 million viewers for Pittsburgh versus Boston. The year before that, it was pretty low. It was 1.36 million for St. Louis and Minnesota. And then the Preds-Dallas Stars Winter Classic from the Cotton Bowl was 1.97 million viewers. That's actually the highest rated Winter Classic in the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's
the last four years. I'm sorry.
And what kind of killed the NHL this time is because it was in Seattle, it's a few hours behind. So the game started at 2 o'clock Central. The playoff was starting at four. At the playoff was game starting at 4 p.m. Not to mention there were other games going, including the Tennessee Vols game, which I watched. So it was like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, it's really tough, and I think that one of the problems the NHL is running into is it's not the Winter Classic has kind of lost its the Stadium Series games now and stuff. And it's like the whole outdoor thing doesn't really draw people in anymore like it used to.
And it's
like
it's another regular season game.
Yeah. When they first started the outdoor game, it was like must watch if you were a hockey fan. But now I'm not so sure that it's must watch, you know, and like it's just, the NHL is going to have to figure out a way to spark interest in it again. Cause right now it's just not as special of an event as it used to be. Now, with that said, if Nashville ever hosts a Winter Classic, I will be there. I will do whatever it takes to be there. The problem is we already kind of talked about it. We don't know how Nashville is ever going to host a game because Nissan Stadium is going away. And the Titans' new stadium is going to be an indoor stadium. There's nowhere else in Nashville to play an outdoor game. But you are a Tennessee Vols fan, Max. What do you think if they played it at Neyland Stadium?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Filling a 100,000 seat stadium 3 hours away. Oh, that's a tall order. But
and it would be really tough. Well, let me say this. Let me just say this.
Yep.
I think it could work if you planned for it and you built and if you did a good job of giving Predators fans a reason to make the drive from Nashville to Knoxville. A lot of Preds fans who live in Nashville are Vols fans. So they have no problem going out to Knoxville. Yep. If you could figure out an effective way to market it and get Preds fans out there, I think they would make the trip. I really do. I think it could work.
So I was thinking kind of one thing on a Preds game, not in Nashville, whether it was Winter Classic Stadium Series, whatever it was. If the NHL decided to do neutral site games, I think one thing that could really work out, Blues versus Predators in Memphis, Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't see a lot of people really trying to go out of their way to go to Memphis right now, but it could work. I do think you could work with that, though. Neyland Stadium, you could play against the Carolina Hurricanes to make it an easy trip for Hurricanes fans. Someone on Twitter posted about that, and I totally agree. They've already kind of got some bad blood with each other, the Canes and the Predators do, both fan bases. That'd be an easy drive for Carolina fans. It'd be an easy – you'd have a central location. The NHL could sell it as hockey in the mountains. I mean, I think it could work. I really do.
And that could honestly be another one of those kind of neutral sites, if you will. The NHL, honestly, they should start doing neutral sites for some of these outdoor games. For example, could you imagine Wild Blackhawks at Lambeau Field in Green Bay?
It'd be cool. Be really cool.
Crazy. But not Preds, so won't go too far there.
So who would be your top team that you would want to see the Predators face if they hosted a Winter Classic? I think it's Dallas Stars, a rematch of the Cotton Bowl game. Easy choice for me. If it's not the Stars, then I would pick the Hurricanes because you really want to see the Predators face another Southern team. I think that just works well. It's easy to market it when you've got two teams from the South playing each other. So for me, it would be Dallas one, my top preferred opponent. Have a rematch of the Winter Classic from Dallas or from the Cotton Bowl. Or against the Hurricanes at Neyland Stadium, that would be really cool as well.
I would have said the Stars, but we already played them. I would like to see the Blues if we hosted a Winter Classic.
That's a good choice.
I think that would be because like St. Louis really close. That'd be an easy drive for them. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Against the Blues.
Definitely. All right, we are going to round out episode 215 of Catfish and Ice presented by DraftKings, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. If you're catching us on YouTube right now, we appreciate a subscribe down at the bottom. That'd be really helpful. Appreciate you watching. All right, so Smashville Pulse. It's a new segment we're going to try here in 2024 where we look up what's going on social media. What are Predators fans talking about? And so let me start with how people feel about the UC Soros trade rumors. And I'm seeing a split fan base right now. A lot of people are loyal to UC Soros. A lot of people are ready to trade him. Seeing a lot of that from the fans out there. Whereas if you would have asked that question a year or two ago, I think a lot more people would have been on board with UC Soros is untouchable. I'm not seeing that now from fans across social media. A lot more fans are starting to come around with the business decision here of let's flip UC Soros now and move on and get a king's ransom for him. I'm seeing a lot of fans come that way.
Yeah. It's tough, honestly. You know, it's from what we've seen with Barry Trotz, it seems like he really wants to keep Soros. And like I can't, you know, it's one of those things where you really can't blame him for that. You know, it's hard to, you know, part with goaltenders like that when you have them. But if the Preds are going to go still, or they can continue kind of their retool / rebuild, and they have a guy like Askarov in the system, and you don't want to rush Askarov to be a starter so quickly. But if you kind of go with 1 or 2 years with Askarov and like another veteran goaltender, you can kind of split the, theoretically Askarov and Lincoln, you kind of split their starts for the next 1 or 2 years. That could work for sure. But I would say, you know, me personally, I don't know that I'm quite ready to answer that question just yet.
I'm not either. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I guess it would all depend on what the return was. I mean, yeah. if it's a trade return that's too good to pass up, then I guess I would have to get on board with it. But I haven't came to that realization yet that I think that the best decision right now is to trade UC Soros. Because great top five goalies do not come around very easily. This franchise has been blessed with great goalies throughout its history.
Yep.
The last thing you want is to end up trading away Soros. Askarov is not who you thought he was. And then suddenly you're in a position that you've pretty much never been in since you've been a franchise. You could be out in the cold without a franchise goalie, just like that.
Yeah.
If you don't handle that. The Soros situation the right way, you could be with it. I mean, think about this franchise from the beginning. From the beginning, they had Mike Dunham, Tomas Vokoun. Then they had Chris Mason. They had Dan Ellis, who were good goalies. Then Pecorine finally came up and did what he did. And then you go to UC Soros. I mean, you've just been blessed with great goalies. Most of these fans don't know what it's like to have a team that doesn't have a reliable goalie. And that's why a lot of fans are freaking out right now about how Soros has played in the first half, is they're worried that he is becoming that type of a goaltender. But I don't think it just happens overnight that suddenly he's a bad goalie. You know,
no, I mean, and I still think he's better than what he's shown. And I've been one of those who's been pretty vocal saying, you know, you got to let him get through the early season jitters. But like at this point now, you're like, you got to get it together. You got to consistently get it together pretty quickly. I mean, he was doing really well in that, you know, month long winning stretch. And we thought, you know, he's back, like he never left. But like, you got to be more consistent. You know, at this point, I think we can safely say that Juice has not been what we expected him to be or what he really should be.
Yep. I mean, and this is going to keep coming up until Soros gets a new contract. It's going to keep coming up. It's going to be one of the top conversations that Preds fans have on social media with each other is what's going to happen with UC Soros. And right now it feels like the fan base is very, very split on how they feel about it, which is pretty shocking. Pretty shocking that fans are starting to think that. All right. With that said, we are going to let you go here for episode 215 of Catfish and Ice with Max Greenberg and Chad Minton. Thank you for watching and listening to the first episode of 2024. We hope your new year is off to an amazing start. We will see you next week for a new episode. Congrats to the winners of the two shirts and the stickers. And we will be getting in touch with you soon. We will do more merchandise giveaways in the coming weeks, so stay tuned for that. Follow us on X at Catfish Ice on Facebook, and also hit subscribe on YouTube. Until then, everyone stay safe and take care. We'll see you next time.
See you guys later.